This is John Johnson on Radio Edutalk. I'm just waiting for a noise to come through the line to tell me I'm actually broadcasting.
Yep, it's working fine, John.
Can you hear it? I must have a bit of lag. Anyway, tonight, as usual, you can just hear the voice of David Noble, who is in, I'm presuming, home in Dalgetty Bay tonight, David.
Yep. Yeah, just a quiet night in home.
And I'm in Glasgow, as usual, sitting in my daughter's bedroom. It is Wednesday, and it's the 13th of November. And tonight, I'm really pleased to be talking to Robert Drummond. Good evening, Robert.
Hi there.
And one of the reasons I think it's really exciting to Robert, as I heard him talk at Teach Me SLF, and I read his blog, it's really interesting. Robert, maybe you could start off by just giving us a wee bit of background about where you're coming from, how you got to where you are, and where you are, and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm a fossil because I'm in my 20th year of teaching this year. I started off with BBC Micros in school, sort of always interested in computers. I kind of did a bit of stuff at that with college, but that was way different to what we're doing now, of course. And a couple of years ago, I became the sort of Chrome cover teacher with an ICT sort of remit around that. So I particularly then really got into looking at what we could do that would be not PowerPoints and not just Word documents. And part of that was I went and spent 2 days in Crewe at the NACE Hothouse event, and that's where I came across the Digital Leaders, which I've sort of done the last couple of years in school and trying to set up a Scottish network. So this year I'm out of class again doing the Macrone stuff, some of which is IT and some of which is my other string to the bow, I guess, which is music. So yeah, that's pretty much where I am at the minute.
Yeah, I noticed when I was just checking URLs and things for tonight's show that on your About Me page you had a music blog which I hadn't seen before, and we'll maybe talk a wee bit about that later on. But I think it'd be good, Robert, to maybe start with just a basic grounding in digital leaders, if you could tell us what a digital leader is, where the ideas came from, and how you're taking it forward. That'd be really interesting, I think.
Yeah, well, I came across the digital leaders from a sort of presentation by a woman called Shelley Blackburn and a guy called, now he's Lagerama on Twitter, can't remember his name in real life, and Chris Mayo at the NACE Hothouse. And the basic idea behind digital leaders, I suppose it's part extracurricular club and part sort of ICT prefect, geefect leadership sort of thing going on. The idea is that we all know there's kids in school who are really into their IT, and what you do is you sort of take those children, you get them to apply for a post, you do a bit of interviewing of them, and then they get some responsibilities around ICT in school. So some of the things they might do some of the everyday ICT tasks that need doing on the computers, you sort of updates to bits of software. They might trial bits of software for you. They might teach other members of staff how to use bits of software. They'll help other children with how to use software in the sort of day-to-day running of the school. And then in the after-school club, what we did last year at Uphall was one or two of them made a website because we couldn't really afford to buy into some of the commercial math software at the time. So they found free websites and created a wiki around that. We did bits of sort of programming with Scratch programming, little bits using the Mozilla WebMaker tools. And then the children sort of had little sessions where they brought in apps to share with each other, almost like a sort of little mini Teach Me, but with the kids running it. So that was, I suppose, yeah, that's digital leads and where we were last year. And then at the end of the year last year, I got the children together and we did two things. The P7s who were leaving created some questions for this year's children for their interview process, which was great. And I had a chat with the rest of the group and said, well, what would you like to do next year? And the thing that came across was they'd really like to interact with other digital leaders. Now, in England, there's quite a few digital leader groups out and about, but I couldn't seem to see so many in Scotland. So I sort of tried to get a digital leader network going. We've got 14 or 15 people with, I think, 3 or 4 sets set up in our Google Plus group at the minute. So hopefully fairly soon we'll start meeting up via some kind of online medium, whatever we can get to work for all of us. And then it'd be great if at some point we actually meet up somewhere and actually run something like a sort of teach meet event, but with kids doing it.
That sounds wonderful. David, I don't know, it reminds me very much of the two young digital entrepreneurs we talked to a few weeks ago on EduTalk, and these were guys who were in secondary school, and they had built a resource bank for their school online, sort of off their own bat, and you actually seem to take this right down into the primary, Robert. Would you say this is a sort of enterprise approach?
I suppose it is, yeah. It's quite different, but the children get loads out of it. And I think as well, I think the other children are quite surprised anyway by when they start saying, this is what we've done. And then they explain to you, oh, actually, yeah, we could do that as well. Mm-hmm. That it's not that challenging, but it's just seeing a few of their sort of peers, I think, perhaps, taking a bit of the lead and showing, yeah, we could all have a good go at this.
And the other word you used, you sort of almost said geek in describing the kids at one point, I think.
Yes, I did,
and
yeah.
Do you think that word's now becoming sort of detoxified and it's becoming almost fashionable to take an interest in IT in a maybe more deep way for young kids?
I think it certainly is with the kids who have been working on the digital leaders, yeah, that they sort of felt very comfortable with that and were sort of quite happy that was really sort of their thing, you know. Like some children might be sort of football, art or whatever, but the sort of IT was their thing. But then interestingly, within 13 or 14 folk in the group, they'll take the basic tools of IT and they'll then take them the way they want to take them as well. So you get 14 different outcomes, but IT is just sort of the medium they're choosing to express it with.
Yeah, so do you give them a reasonable amount of freedom in what they're doing then?
Yeah, I try to. They'll spark ideas off each other. And we tried last year, once a month to get the children to bring something in, an app they'd used or a program they'd used, something like that, just to share within the group. So that worked really well. The other thing they really enjoyed doing was making videos with bringing their own devices in, their iPads, yeah, and making videos and things like that, sort of movie trailers, and just basically having fun with the technology, really.
Yeah, it's a lot of creativity, I think, we can tap into, and I think, as you say, bring your own devices, was that just for the after-school club they brought in their own devices, or do they bring them in more generally?
It was just for the after school club. We're in the process in Uphall and in West Lothian of bringing in the anywhere, anytime learning sort of network. So we've got our two, stop me if this gets too techie, we've got our two lockdown secure internet channels that the staff can get on, but only if your device is authorised by the authority, I think. So my phone can recognise there's two channels and it can't get on them. So we're trying to open up the AAL, which would be like going to your local library or your local McDonald's, your local free Wi-Fi place, so that the children can hop on, but with their username and account. So we're working towards that. I think it's quite a big job, I think, to do it. So we're working towards that. And one of the things that the digital leaders are going to be doing in a couple of months' time is having a sort of bit of time with the parents to explain what exactly this is, how it's going to work, and then feeding back to the rest of the school, this is what it is, this is how it's going to work, and then this is the sort of IT safety issues around it, and, you know, this could be really good, but we need to treat it really correctly as well in an adult, sort of mature manner.
So the sort of guest network for the kids' own devices will be cut off from the corporate network and the things that the local authority maybe would want to protect?
I think the idea is it's going to have the same we use WebSense filtering, mm-hmm. So I think the idea is it's going to have the same level of WebSense filtering in it.
Yeah, but they'll not get to corporate servers, for instance, and things like that, I presume.
No, yeah. No, they'll not be getting onto shared folders that we have in the building and things like that now.
But so they've got the sort of internet access, which is, I suppose, 90% of what you really want anyway, isn't it?
It totally is. And of course, it allows them to share what they're creating on their own devices into some shared spaces, either on the sort of Office 365 sort of Glow approach or Dropbox, that sort of thing. Because that's I think, one of the things around the bring your own device is the kids can create great stuff. It's on their own device. It then goes home.
Yeah, and it's trying to get it off them for assessment or for record keeping or for evidence.
Yeah, absolutely. You're just sharing the stuff they're doing.
So have you investigated the tools in the new Glow, especially the sort of SkyDrive aspect for that?
I've had a little look. I think I'm right in saying our local authorities asked us not to be doing too much within it yet. He says carefully, I'll get a... Yeah. If my phone starts going, it'll be my head teacher saying...
I think the advice is hard because there's so much different advice coming from different places on Glow at the moment.
Yeah, that's why the digital leader network's in Google Plus, because I know within our school I tried to get Skype and that just wasn't happening at all. And I wasn't entirely sure... I know we were asked not to use Glow Groups before the summer when the sort of swap over was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So didn't use it then. So I thought, well, we'll put it there. We can move it anywhere that works, really. You haven't to go anywhere.
So you can use Google Plus in school and
yes,
use that with children?
Yeah, on the teacher account you can. So if I was going to do sort of like a webcast or something, I'd log into my teacher account, set the webcam up, and I kind of then hope that across different authorities, if we're meeting up, that they could do the same as well.
Sounds good. It sounds really interesting. David, have you got anything on...
Yeah, I was just wondering about, maybe just going back to the digital leaders idea for a moment, Robert. Am I right in saying that you were looking to possibly grow this within the authority or even nationally?
Well, yeah, I suppose so. I'm certainly looking to link things up a bit more because I think as well, I've spoken to sort of two or three folk at sort of cluster meetings in West Lothian, and there's a lot of similar sort of stuff going on already. So I think if we could link up, because I think the kids are very keen to link up and learn off each other. And yeah, we've got a digital leader group in Google Plus, which is just really to somewhere where I've put some resources in if you're thinking of starting up a digital leader group, and then just somewhere where we can try and just get lists of people who are running the groups, contacts, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there isn't...
I appreciate it must be very difficult to get that kind of set up within the structures of formal education, within the school day, and teachers that might be really keen on the idea but might not have opportunities to network or to set up meetups or what have you into the evenings. But you're just looking at what kind of interest might be out there and possibly build something in the future.
I think so. There's sort of three or four teachers who are setting ones up sort of quite local to the sort of Lothians area, and there's a teacher over in around Glasgow, Kirk somewhere, which I'm not going to try and pronounce, who's got a sort of quite a well-embedded digital leader group. And it wasn't until I made the group that I sort of came across them at all. So I just wonder how many more there might be out there. So I think teacher meets and things like that is quite a good way of reaching out for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Have you come across different ways that other people are running this, or are people looking to you to see how you've set this up?
I've not really come across other ways of doing it. I know that there's two or three schools in the cluster sort of running after school sort of ICT club.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding of that was that it was kind of a little bit perhaps more teacher led, with the teacher saying, well, this week we'll look at this particular piece of software or something. And I think the digital leads, I like the idea of the kids bringing their own things in, their own ideas a bit more.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So perhaps if we could go and, you know, do some sharing around those schools, we might sort of spread the idea a bit more around there as well.
I suspect there's actually quite a lot. I mean, I've seen people who've got ICT kids or, you know, GlowBugs or this or that, who have a similar sort of role, but they maybe haven't, they're just not networked. Maybe it's, it would be an idea to try and connect people via what you're already doing and finding out. And I certainly think I'll take a lot of this back to North Lanarkshire and put it in front of ICT coordinators, Robert, because you've got something going that they can tie into and make things, I think, a little more interesting once you start networking and working together across different places.
Yeah, I think when the kids get involved and get meeting, I think, yeah, it does get very interesting, and they just take it in ways that certainly I never think of.
Mm-hmm. Well, but see, this approach that you're talking about is really interesting, and it reminds me a bit about some of the work that I'm seeing coming out of community learning and development and youth work, and even in some schools where the young people, you know, whether it's in an unstructured way or whether it's part of a dynamic youth award or a youth achievement award, that are actually running projects themselves. And I like the kind of idea that you've got about the young people using their expertise and their knowledge and actually teaching and guiding and advising others within the school community. I'm just wondering then, I noticed on your website you were, I think it's, is it Visualise Me, it's a kind of online CV, and you talk about being in the process of, you know, revamping the ICT curriculum within the school. I mean, is that something that you've actually had time to see through, and if you have, can you give us an idea about other ways that you've kind of made changes within Uphold?
Well, it's very much an ongoing thing, and it's, we had a look at it last year. We had a working party, and it became quite a slow process, sort of working through different ideas. And I think I know we might come into this later, but I know, you know, Doug Belshaw and his web literacy standard, you've seen that?
Yeah.
Well, I really like that and the way it talks about the different levels and creating things, which I think is a really good way to go with the ICT. And then I met up with Doug when I was down at the MozFest in London, and he showed me a blog post that Charlie Love had done linking the Curriculum for Excellence Technologies document back to the Web Literacy Standard. And I've not come across that before, and struck me something that, yeah, that's a really good thing, and a way I think I'd quite like to go with it.
So maybe this is it, the time you could maybe move on a wee bit to MozFest, because I know from reading your tweets and having a look at your blog, Robert, you went down to the MozFest. Maybe you could just start by giving us, for people who aren't aware of it, what it is, and how you found out about it, and why you wanted to go down to London on a weekend.
Yeah, well, so the MozFest, it's the Mozilla Festival, which they have. They've had, it was the fourth one. They have an annual festival, and I came across it, I think, last year, probably through the sort of tweets that were going around at the time, probably through Doug Belshaw's tweets. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, it looks really quite interesting, some of the stuff they're doing there. So I sort of kept my eye out, and when it came up this year, first thing I spotted was, wow, tickets only £40. I thought, that's really good value. So I bought the tickets and got organised with that. And then I looked at the sort of the agenda and what was going to be on there. I used the Mozilla WebMaker tools before and thought they were really great. And I quite like the idea of open badges, but I was never entirely sure how they were going to sit together. So, well, those are two things that were going to be there. So I thought, right, let's head off and see what happens with that then. So that was the sort of reasoning behind going, was just using some of the tools. And I suppose the cheapness of the tickets as well, really.
Are you sure? Yeah, that's an honorary Scotsman.
Yeah, well, I'm from near Yorkshire as well, so, you know.
works well. But so you went down to Mosul. It's 2 days?
It was 2 days and a science fair on the Friday evening.
Yeah, and I'd be interested just in a sort of comparison to, you know, say, Scottish Learning Festival or, you know, things like that, conferences like that, how it compares.
Right, it was the science fair on the Friday night, I suppose, was similar to the sort of learning festival. So, you know, the main auditorium where they've got lots of the people sort of showing you the new educational things, trying to sell various things, this, that and the other. The main difference being that they weren't selling anything. So what was there was open source, free, and people were working on different schemes, different sort of projects and things. That's a better word than schemes. That sounds a bit sinister. For example, I saw sort of a BBC News thing that they've been working on, looking with open data. That's quite interesting. I came across, now, is it called We Kill All Cats or something? Which is basically a fabulous game that someone's written to teach kids to code. I'll send you the link. And the idea is it's a simple platform game, and you're running along, and basic instructions, run, jump, etc., and you jump, and you can't jump far enough. So what you do is you extend in the code itself the length of the platform, and then you can jump it. So, you know, digital leaders, they would love that, yeah. This sort of thing. So it was lots of little things like that. You know, the They Work For You website, they were sort of a little stand there showing people what they were doing with the data. So that was quite like the Learning Festival sort of main auditorium area, I suppose. And then the Saturday and the Sunday was divided up into, there was plenaries was the name given to, you called them the keynotes at the start and at the end of the day, and then you broke off into different areas, and it was on 9 different floors, and basically each floor was given over to a theme. So the Badgers had a floor, the Webmaker Tools had a floor, and they were the ones I sort of knew about. And then some other really interesting things, like Hive Learning. Don't know if you've come across that before.
No. Oh, is that Hive Learning? Is it out in New York?
Yeah, it is. It's, yeah, New York, Chicago and Pittsburgh, I think.
Yeah, I think in the Mozilla MOOC, I can't remember what they called it. Was it just Moz MOOC? I can't remember. There was a MOOC I did earlier this year that was Webmakers MOOC, maybe. I don't know.
Yes.
The Hive people were involved in that. Their site became the hub, I think, for that MOOC.
Yeah, so they had a floor, and I went on to it, which was really interesting. There was an open science floor, which was all about open science data. There was a news journalism floor, which was... they had speakers there from The Guardian and The New York Times and ProPublica, the guys who sort of broke the NSA story.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, from going down thinking I'll find out about open badges, you know, a day later you're sort of meeting Guardian journalist who's broken this, I think, wow, this is, yeah, it was, that bit was a major culture shock, really. Yeah. Sort of not really put Mozilla into that thing at all.
So did you, it was more of a wander around, you didn't stick with particular things or workshops or anything, you just could go and visit various people?
Yeah, that was the idea. I tried to be a bit strategic, so I thought, well, I want to go and find out about open badges in particular. With the open badges, I love the idea of them. I love the idea of them crediting skills, learning that doesn't take place in school. Where I've always come unstuck with them is okay, so this child has earned this badge. What do they then do with it? You could give it to them in Edmodo, for example, but if they leave Edmodo, that badge is gone. And there's a company there called Digital Me who seem to be linking up with Mozilla and are linking up with the MakeWaves
site.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And they're sort of forming together so that their badges are all interchangeable. So I'm thinking, well, the more this that goes on, the more you can see, well, you know, a child could get a badge for something and it can actually be carried with them somewhere else. It's not just completely stuck in something like Edmodo. Well, I think the badges are brilliant, but if you leave Edmodo, you've lost it.
So is that the Mozilla backpack idea?
Yeah, it is, but I'm pretty certain it was linked through to something that Digital Me did as well. Yeah. Or actually, no, it was Makewaves. So I earned a badge for doing one thing with the Mozilla, and the code went through to the Makewaves badge pack as well. So it's the same badge, but two or three options of where I could display it.
Yeah, the open badge thing seems quite interesting. Have you started actually trying to set it up in school with any particular system?
I did. I taught a P4-5 class last year, and I worked in... I started using Edmodo with them, mainly to do some work around the badges. And I found it was quite successful in that it motivated the children. They enjoyed getting the badges, and they quite liked, you know, oh, I've got my 2x table badge, I've got my 5x table badge. So, yeah, that was a little bit, but I was always thinking, well, at the end of the day, it's not going any further than this particular program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, how did you get the impression that there was systems that could be picked up and used now for open badges by teachers? You know, there were systems that were ready for general classroom use.
I think it's getting very close, because the Makewave stuff is very sort of teacher and child friendly. The only potential drawback I could see with that, here comes the slight Yorkshireman in me, is that there's a basic package and a premium package. Mm. And I suppose it's what price the premium package, and then where the schools would want to buy into that for a bit, what's a bit of an unknown at the moment.
Yeah, I think the Makewaves company, there's a Makewaves company and there's another, I think the Digital Me is free and open source, although they kind of work together. So I don't know how exactly they work. We were just a couple of weeks ago, after talking about open badges here, had a wee shot of setting up WP open badges, which works off WordPress.
All right.
But I'm not 100% sure I've really got it working properly yet. There seems sort of slightly rough edges there, and I know that the actual plugin or whatever is in beta and it's under development, but it looks like quite an interesting system. We would quite like to just for fun give badges to people that appear on or contribute audio and things like that to Edutalk, just as a way out of playing with the technology in a sort of investigative way. And as I say, I spent a day or two messing around with it, but I think I'll need to get back to it and see how it's going. So you may get a badge.
Fantastic. That's good. And then I'll have to work out how to display it.
Yeah, it should flow into your backpack, as I understand it.
Well, guys, I know that Ian Hallahan's just started tuning in this evening, and he's saying that he might draw the conversation back towards digital leaders, because he's sadly missed out in that part of the show. But he's also saying that he has a similar experience with. Or start to his kind of journey with using open badges. He loved the Edmodo badges, but wanted them to be portable. So, but it sounds as if the companies are taking this kind of feedback on board. And you know, certainly at Teach Meet Fife, the Makewaves presentation from Leona Tindall went down really well, and it just seems to be a fantastic resource.
Yeah,
but Robert, do you think that certainly from what Leona was showing me and the rest of the colleagues at Teach Meet Fife, it looked to me as if the kind of basic package would suffice. Do you feel that that's the case, or you know, do you end up having to spend money for the premium service?
I think from what I've seen, which isn't a huge amount, if I look around a couple of school websites, it does look like the sort of basic package should kind of do the job at the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You get lots of sort of pupil logins, which is great. You get sort of teacher overall access. I suppose I saw that and I thought perhaps worried too much that, well, that looks really good. How are you going to make it last if the basic is so good? Because, you know, you've got to pay the bills.
I think Make Waves have been around for quite a long time.
Used to be radio waves.
Used to be radio waves. That's why I think I started podcasting. So I've talked to them a few times, but I think Fife have bought in as a local authority to Make Waves, so you can use the full package. I might be wrong about that in Fife School.
I'm not sure if that's the case anymore, John. But I might be wrong on that. But certainly many Fife schools are involved, and there's quite a few key teachers and on Twitter in the Fife area who are very passionate about Make Waves.
Yeah, I mean, I reviewed the mobile app a year or two ago, and it just seemed for young kids, for primary school age kids, the best thing I'd seen for publishing online, because it handled audio, it handled video, and it handled pictures and text just very nicely. And that was before the badges stuff.
I think that's something I'm going to have a bit more of a look at, really, because it does sound really good. And I think, yeah, certainly like to get more kids publishing blogging stuff. And if there's an app and you can put video and audio straight from it, that just sounds great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Robert, just kind of to break away from kind of technology chat for a moment, although it does relate to EduTalk. I mean, I've loved the short podcasts that you've done with your I suppose your various classes down the kind of last two or three years, the wee pieces of audio that you've submitted to EduTalk. And can you just say a bit about how you've gone about recording these podcasts? That they've always struck me, for anyone that's not listened to them, they tend to be, I don't know, maybe three, four, five minutes long. People's really just being asked quite simply, you know, what have you been learning about, or, you know, can you explain this that's in front of you, what have you been up to? Seems very authentic, seems a really kind of nice dialogue between yourself and the pupils. So why I'm also surprised that other people haven't kind of taken on that approach, but what got you into kind of playing about with that, and what kind of response of the young people had to actually taking part in recording, and maybe to any feedback they've received?
I think I probably got into it when I got my first Android phone, and I played about and found the Audio Boo app, just because all of a sudden it just became so easy. You know, it was sort of one touch, record and then send and tag it in between. And that was it gone. And I think a lot of the time, I think loads of good things go on with the children, but you often don't have a chance to record them, because it's just some brilliant little question that gets asked. I just thought, well, this is quite a good way of just trying to draw this together and talk about sort of learning, and maybe make sort of, we've introduced learning logs through the school. I just thought, well, this is quite another good way of just talking about children learning. What do you find hard? What might you do again? And then it's very easily shared as well, because if it won't connect up to the internet, I can still put the speaker thing into my phone and the kids can hear it back, so they can feedback on it then. The children have really enjoyed it, and when they've seen sort of bits of feedback on it, they've enjoyed that. When they've found their sort of the channel that we created as well through Audio Boo on iTunes with our school logo, there was a little bit of we're on iTunes sort of thing, you know, as well. So it was a real sort of authentic thing to it. I don't know why. Maybe just because maybe SoundCloud's a bit more musicy. I seem to have moved away from Audio Boo this year for the music blog, and onto SoundCloud, which I don't think we could. Would that tag through into EduTalk?
No, they don't. Or the last time I looked at their API, they didn't provide sort of access to URLs. I mean, it's a nice service. Also, I think the way SoundCloud are going, they've the latest interface change has sort of hidden the Creative Commons searches and things that are a bit harder to find. And I think that's a few sites like YouTube and things are shying away from automatic sharing systems and things. So it's at the moment I can't manage to do that, Robert.
Mm-hmm. Robert, what is it you like about SoundCloud?
Do you know, you've got me a bit stumped there, because I kind of, it's just dawned on me that we've lost out on a bit of potential audience for some of the music stuff the kids have been doing by not going down the audio boo boos. I don't think there's a massive difference. They're both very easy to work off the phone. I think I just thought SoundCloud was a bit more musicy, whereas I think the audio boost stuff I'd come across was a bit more sort of talk-based.
Yeah.
But then there's no reason why you couldn't record sound onto audio, but that, the interface would work. I may have a play about with that next week.
That's nice. It'd be nice to hear the odd uphill boo flowing into EduTalk again, because I think it's a nice break if people listen to maybe serious or techie things to get your kids. I remember the ones they did from, I think they were a camping trip and away somewhere. Which,
that's right. I think there was the P7s down at Broomley.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. Can we maybe swing back to Mozilla a wee bit, Robert, before going on to some other things? I was really interested and impressed with the last blog post that you made about something that, and I'm going to murder his name, Anil Dash, I think. Is that anywhere near it?
I reckon that's it, yes.
Okay, that's a good guess. What was talking about and the sort of conclusions and thoughts you had around that, which I thought were really interesting, contrasting with, you know, services, and I know they're not similar services, but like YouTube or Twitter or Facebook and other things we're finding on the web, which are floating at the moment, for instance, with Twitter floating and have a commercial background, and the sort of the atmosphere and the vibe that you got at Mozilla. I maybe wonder if you could talk a wee bit about that.
Yeah, the sort of... The thing that came across at the whole sort of Mozilla Fest really was, or the thing I took away, was really thinking about what it is we're doing on the internet, on the web, and who owns it, and if you create something, who owns it, and are you happy with them owning it, and are you then happy with what they're going to do with it? So we've got these fabulous tools now, but we need to think, and we need to think quite quickly about what it is that we're doing with them. So the guy, Anil Dash, is a sort of startup, does startup companies in New York, and he spoke on the, I think it was the Saturday morning, really passionately about the internet, about saying how he was a blogger, and that was different. You don't hear someone saying, I'm a Pinterester, for example, or I'm a YouTuber, but blogging was different. He felt there was more creativity in that, and you were sort of putting more stuff into the web rather than just sort of tweaking things. And then he was talking about how he felt bits of control of the internet had moved away, bits of the web had moved away. So you've got Facebook, who kind of push you the way they want to go with various interests built into that, where, if you like, you're the product, aren't you? And then he was talking about how he got a son, who was 2.5, and he was saying that he spends more time checking his Twitter feed than he does probably reading to his son. And he said that, and there was a bit of a pause, and it was a bit of an interesting moment. And he said, you know, I feel quite ashamed of that. And then he came up with this phrase, which was, if we're spending all this time online, we need to do something good with it. And then he spoke about how people were using the internet for different good purposes, and they were sort of reclaiming their own content, and they were making links, and they were using different tools, well, sort of Arab Spring, that sort of thing. And it struck me as a really, really powerful message. And then on the Saturday afternoon, someone spoke about... content and privacy on the net, and they launched their new Lightbeam tool, which I don't know if you've seen that, but that's fantastic. You go on a website and it shows you which of the websites you're actually on at the same time, which really makes you think. And the person running that said, now I made a tweet about that because I wanted to remember this, was that if 9-year-olds can be passionate about the environment, they can be passionate about privacy on the internet. And I thought, well, actually, yeah, I think they can. And it just struck me, it's something that really does matter to our young children, to our young people, but it's probably not something we really touch upon much in schools. It's not really there, but it's quite a big issue, thinking of this ownership and crediting people for doing these things, and also making sure you can create things yourself with it, which is probably a very waffly answer to your question.
No, I think that's a great answer. As I say, I really loved the post, because I got a sense from it that there was a moral purpose behind Mozilla.
Yeah, that's put in a nutshell what I tried to say there, I think. That was what I came away from the conference with, was a moral purpose. Yeah.
And I would have thought that would have fitted with an awful lot of teachers, because, you know, teachers in general tend to have, even sometimes hidden behind a cynical exterior, they've got, you know, morality, and their purpose is to do good. And I wondered then if Mozilla would be slightly better fit with education than maybe some of the, you know, other tools that we're trying to use on the web, because these other things are driven by advertising or data collecting or this and that.
I would certainly think so. Yeah, it struck me as being quite a good thing to be working with in education, really. It really did, and there were lots of good people there doing, I felt, lots of good things. It was really interesting. And it was a huge range of people as well. I think I'm right in saying it seems to be the yearly festival for Mozilla. So all their people were there, a bit like, I guess, the Apple conference or something. And I started off, I suppose, on the first day thinking, well, I was thinking, well, why Mozilla here? Why? Because it was fantastic. It was free food, fantastic building. Everything was laid on for me. I thought, that's really good. Why are they doing this? Yeah. And then as the time went on, you saw what was happening was that we were all crowdsourcing together and creating things. So there were coders there who were doing bits of code to create different tools that they wanted to see, and they got Mozilla people on hand to help them with that. They got people with ideas. They got some digital leaders there. And it just all felt that actually, well, you're doing this because what you want is our input, which we're happily giving, because I think we feel safe with what you're going to do with it as well.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. It's maybe a channel that needs to be opened up a wee bit more. One of the sort of concerns I've got when I'm talking to people involved in education is some of the things that you've been talking about tonight, about, say, using Mozilla Thimble or talking to children about who owns their content when it's online, is quite a long way down the rabbit hole, if you know what I mean. You've had to find out a lot of things, do a lot of research, take a lot of your own time up, and I get a kind of sense that there's a gap between teachers like yourself and other teachers who are maybe less sure of using online content, and I don't know if that gap is growing or it's narrowing, because it seems to me that people who are at the cutting edge are moving away at a rate of knots. And I wonder if you have any thoughts on how we can bring other people along.
I think possibly you're right with that, because certainly with the gap ground, because sometimes I feel that we're getting a little bit bogged down with various inverted commas initiatives, etc., that actually maybe aren't going as far with children's learning as they could be. And also sometimes using bits of software that aren't the easiest for people to use. I don't know how you change it, I suppose, too much. I know, for example, I know our school blog, when we had the AAL on briefly, as a sort of pilot with it, lots of the teachers put the app onto their phones and they're really happy blogging from their phones. And we've got on our school blog, you know, two or three teachers who are really on board with it and they really enjoy it. And because of that, they've taken their own sort of technology knowledge, I guess, further themselves because they see the benefit of it. So I suppose it's just maybe offering more opportunities and showing the benefits. But within that, everything's a priority as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, there's so many things. I was wondering as well what sort of thoughts you had. I mean, some of the things you've been doing with digital leaders that allow the children almost to lead where they're, what tools they're going with and where they're going with. And do you see there's any value in maybe helping teachers to understand that they can follow the kids? They don't need to know how to do the technical things quite so well, but what they can do is put a more philosophical structure around it, or question it, or, you know, ask sort of more meta questions rather than technical questions.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's really important, because I think you can learn. I think kids know you can learn how to operate various apps or web tools or whatever by a bit of Google and a bit of watching a YouTube video. And like you say, the questioning bit, that's the bit that the teachers can put in, isn't it? And that's the bit that maybe you're not going to get yourself. That's where the children do need perhaps a bit more sort of guidance. So, yeah, I think that's really important. I suppose it's just trusting that if you let the children go with it, they probably are going to do it.
Yeah, David, have you any thoughts on this? Oh, we might have lost David for a minute. The other thing that probably we're getting...
I'm here, John.
Oh, you're here. Sorry. Maybe it's got a bit laggy there.
Yeah, it's... I was playing about with the mute button and I forgot to unmute myself. It's for the remnants of my cold... Yeah. Didn't want to be doing the heavy breathing while you were in that kind of deep conversation there. No, Robert, the last thing for me is that I know that you're very keen on maths education and you've worked with organisations in the past, so you must have a real wealth of experience and a kind of insight into the great resources that have been out there in recent years. But I'm just wondering if there's any advice that you've got for teachers of the kind of early levels of numeracy and mathematics. You know, what resources are out there that we should look out for? Similarly, are you actually involved in developing resources presently?
Not at the moment, no. I don't know about where you folks were, but... West Lothian are currently using the East Lothian SEAL Maths approach. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I haven't, no.
It's very much based... Lots of it, is based on the numeracy strategy sort of ideas from Englandshire. It's lots of quite practical activities, lots of counting... backwards and forwards. This is with the early years sort of group. And then it's things like recognising fives. And I've got a friend who's absolute whiz and an expert at this, and she's just brilliant. Speak to her, yeah. It's things like, subitizing numbers? So, for example, getting children to close their eyes and then say, show me five, and... You know, sort of some children can just do that straight away. Some children kind of count out five with their eyes closed, or show me seven, and how they do that. And it's really that sort of internalising almost the numbers, what the numbers look like, and then going on with the approach. And then it's stuff like sort of friends of 10, crossing the Thames boundaries. And I suppose the things I'm more familiar with, but that stuff around the seal, around the very early learning the numbers, that was really interesting. I'm not sure where you get hold of that, really, because I know I've had a sheet of it and I've lost it and I've Googled it. I couldn't really find it again. But I know West Lothian are rolling that out, and that's, it's not so much a resource as a way of doing it. And there's little resources, I suppose, around it. Like there's the number bus where you've got 10 upstairs and 10 downstairs. And if you fill downstairs and you put 3 on upstairs, and how many is that? And you want them instantly to say 13 because they recognise the 10s there and 3 more. And it's just lots of practice like that approach. But it's had some really good results with the early years numeracy stuff that we've done in our school.
No, that's really interesting. That's something I'll have a wee look on. But you've said you've had a look online and it's yeah, not there, so something that maybe Twitter might help out with.
Yeah, I'll tell you who will know is John Sexton, Mr. S Maths Wizard.
Of course, who I believe has been listening to the show tonight. So. Yeah.
Right, shout out for him.
So there's a sort of digital answer is Ask John. Robert, I realise we've run on quite a long time now, but I'd just like to ask you one more question from my point of view. You keep a blog where you discuss some of the things you've been talking about tonight and other things, and I just wonder if you could say why and how important it is to you, and give us some background to that.
Yeah, right. If we go with the why, I remember about 4 or 5 years ago, I had a class which I think the term is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
I found it a real tough challenge with some of these kids. And the approaches I was trying just weren't working. And what I sort of had a bit of a look around on the internet, and I came across some stuff by Tom Barrett, who I guess you've heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Games-based learning, that kind of stuff. And I tried that, and that worked brilliantly. And then, you know, I saw that he was writing a blog, and I thought, well, you know, really, that really helped me through a really tough, challenging year, really. So initially, I started writing my blog just because I thought, well, probably should all do the same, just share something that we think works. And I suppose it's almost getting over. I'm not saying at any point, hey, this is a fantastic resource, aren't I brilliant? But I suppose it's getting past that, and it's not self-promotion. It's thinking, well, I've used this and it worked for me. It's there on the internet. You can find it. It may well work for you. And for me, getting that mindset was quite a big sea change, really. That I wasn't, yeah, pushing myself forward with that, just sharing stuff. And then as time went on, so initially there's lots of resources on there, and then as time went on, I've done various other things, and I've tried to put bits of reflection on and things like that. So it's like the MozFest post, and some of those posts, I just, that MozFest post just sort of flew onto the keyboard because I felt it was something really important that I really wanted to share. But also because it's there, it's also kept. It's not just in a notebook I'm then going to lose. It's kept there for me, and I can look back and reflect back on that, as can other people. So I suppose that's pretty much why I blog, to share ideas, and then now and again to share a bit of reflection as well. And I started doing the West Lothian Leadership course this year, and we're doing personal learning plans, and we were told we could do those online, and that just seemed the obvious thing for me, again, because I think there's people who may want to read it, may not want to read it, but I felt if it's there, it can be shared, and other people can have a look at it as well, because I know I've benefited from reading, since Tom Barrett's blog, so much stuff by so many people that sort of fed into the classroom has had a really good effect on the learning of the children, that if I can put an idea or something there that helps someone else, that just seemed the right thing to do, I guess.
I like the extra page on your blog, Robert. Is it Lanyard or something like that? Obviously, the connotations of conferences and such like. So it looks as if that's something that you're keeping up to date. I'm just wondering whether Lanyard has got legs as a kind of CPD tool, or whether it doesn't go as kind of deep into maybe reflecting on CPD that you've taken part in or conferences you've attended. It just looks a nice way to at least remind yourself of all the professional learning opportunities you've grasped.
Yeah, you don't really get a lot of chance to sort of reflect back on it, and maybe that's something for the website to develop or for another site. But yeah, very much with me, when I found, you know, someone says, oh, can you write down the CPD you've attended? And it's like, oh, I wrote, yeah. At the time, you think, oh, I'll never forget that. And then 2 weeks later, I've forgotten it. I have a terrible memory. So the more stuff I can save digitally, the better it is for me. So yeah, I just use it to put things in, and then I can, when someone says, what have you done? Oh yeah, it's there, look. But reflecting on it is probably something I should probably try and do more in my blog. Then the cricket season comes around, and that's that, you see.
I think you're the first cricketer we've had on, Robert. I think people up here are more distracted by other sports.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a question just come in from Ian Hallahan on Twitter. Ian says, and I've lost it now. Give me a minute. Sorry about this, folks. Did you see that David?
I don't know which question.
It's
one
he can had. You ask Robert whether he's likely to be around Glasgow for a big, long...
Big long chat.
Not so bad. That would be a big, long drink, but it's not. It's a big, long chat.
All right.
So maybe we could have a wee beer meet at some point and get a few folk together again, if you're ever likely to be on the west side of the country, Robert.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah.
And for anybody who was interested in what you were talking about earlier about the seal, early arithmetical learning, as John Sexton labels it. I believe that it's linked quite closely to the work that's going on in Moray Council presently.
I see there's nice pubs in West Lothian as well, apparently.
Hard to believe. All nice pubs that I thought were on the West Coast. Thanks for stopping there. That's really, really great, Robert. And this has just come to me as a very last question, I think, from me, and I'll stop after that. But the sort of, you've been involved in Teach Meets in Scotland, certainly, presenting and listening, and I wondered if you had any thoughts on a similar sort of thing to the MozFest, where people don't just talk to each other, they actually do something as a meet. If that would be a thing that you think would work.
I think that sounds like a good idea, actually, yeah. I'm just thinking of some of the teachers at my school. I've do incredible sort of crafty, arty displays and things like that. There's whole loads of talent. So it doesn't just have to be sort of IT-based, but sort of like sort of maker party sort of thing. I think that'd be really good.
That might be an interesting idea to take forward. David, have you any last thoughts?
No, I just think it's been great to finally get Robert on the show. So it's been fascinating listening to all the stuff that you've been up to and all your great ideas. I think you just got a really refreshing approach to engaging with young people in schools in this day and age. And I hope these kind of ideas that have maybe been, you know, germinating over the last couple of years, I hope they really not really come to succeed.
Oh, thank you.
And you're on Twitter, Robert, as RobertD1981.
Which is a cricket reference.
Is it? Oh, I thought it was your. It was when you were born, I was thinking.
Sadly not. Botham's Ashes, 1981. Which means nothing to anyone, yeah.
So, the cricket reference will probably pass us right by. And the URL of your blog is robertdrummond.com.
robertfdrummond.com. Drummond got nicked by someone else.
I missed that there. I can see that. www.robertfdrummond.com. If people want to find more about you, if you do have any other links you want to send us and we'll put them together with the show notes, that would be great. The audio from tonight's conversation will be on edutalk.cc in the next couple of days. We've got all sorts of folk coming up. I haven't got a page up to read it. David, can you remember who's coming up in the next couple of weeks?
Well, we don't have a guest as yet for next Wednesday, but I'm kind of busy working on that. So, maybe we do. But I think we've got a wee planning evening, haven't we, in the east end of Glasgow next week, John. So we can sort that out. But anybody that's interested in joining us again tomorrow night, should be a great show. It's going to be coming live from Edinburgh. It's just going to be myself and Dave McMillan, who's a CDT teacher at the James Young High School in Livingston, and we're going to be talking around some master's work that Dave completed last year around the question of how is creativity being interpreted by CDT teachers, and in what ways, if any, of these interpretations been transferred into their practice. And so you can certainly promise it'll be a very interesting show, as we've had this evening. As I say, that's myself and Dave McMillan tomorrow night from 7:45 p.m.
Brilliant, we'll look forward to that. And Robert, can we just say many, many thanks. It's been great to talk to you, and we hope to see you in the flesh, maybe for a beer meet soon. So
that sounds great. Thank you.
Good night, folks.